Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening in. And hello, Mr. Aladdin.
Good morning.
Catch the engineer off guard. I was just checking to see if you were awake.
I am. The microphone wasn't.
And here is Mr. Dennis Hart with a roundup of the past local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here on this Friday before Christmas. Let's start our news rundown the way we usually do, with stories from last Saturday's Ames Tribune. One of them reported that demolition had started on Lincoln Way in Ames, in the area where a Chicago-based business hopes to build a mixed-use development starting next spring. The building that housed Harris Appliance for 61 years has come down, as well as two adjacent houses and a storage building. The Argent Group of Chicago wants to construct a mixed-use development with retail space on the ground floor and rental units above, but no construction can begin until the city council approves it. Another story in last Saturday's paper reported that the city of Ames will start working with stakeholders in the Campus Town neighborhood to gather input on proposed changes to parking in the area south of Lincoln Way. Some of the potential options include creating more short-term parking in the central area of the neighborhood, making more long-term parking on the periphery of the area, and turning some areas of parallel parking into angled parking. Saturday's paper also had word that Mediacom customers in Ames and Boone were experiencing an outage of their high-speed internet service on Friday after an out-of-state construction crew dug too deep and cut Mediacom fibers. It took place near the South 16th Street and Duff Avenue intersection, where the crew was working on a project related to the new Menards store on Southeast 16th Street. The area affected by the outage was a rectangle from South Duff, south of Lincoln Way, all the way to Boone. Also Saturday, the Trib reported that the United Way of Story County held a celebration on Friday, marking the end of its 2018 fundraising campaign. The organization announced that it had raised more than $2,200,000. It was the fifth straight year the United Way had raised more than $2 million for its campaign. And one more note from Saturday's paper, word that two Ames Figure Skating Club members will compete at the U.S. Figure Skating Nationals competition next month. Jordan Gillette of Ames and Alexis Slack of Ankeny both earned a spot to compete in the intermediate-level pairs event in Detroit. Gillette is 18 years old and a student at Gilbert High. Slack is 16 and a student at Ankeny High. Sunday's Tribune reported that families and friends of more than 2,000 Iowa State undergraduates gathered Saturday for the fall 2018 commencement at Hilton Coliseum. The spring 2019 undergraduate commencement will take place next May 11th. Sunday's paper also reported that business owners in downtown Ames had sent a letter to the city council continuing their call for changes to downtown parking rates. The owners say they don't think the council is listening to their concerns that fewer people are going downtown to shop. One owner said she hears negative comments about the parking situation from every customer, and she has started paying for customers' parking if they don't have change to feed the meters. This, months after the city increased the cost of parking at a meter to $1 an hour in two-hour stalls and 75 cents an hour in four-hour stalls. Business owners have proposed a compromise, asking for a reduction of rates to 50 cents an hour, which is still more than they were before rates changed last July 1st. Last month, the city council instructed staff to create a system in which, among other things, people could buy hang tags that would let them park long-term in the lots behind Main Street. Sunday's Trib also reported that Ballard school officials have wasted no time getting to work after voters approved a nearly $20 million bond issue a week ago to fund improvements in the district's middle school, elementary schools, and stadium. The school board, administrators, architect, and project manager have been meeting to move the project forward. Bids could go out in February or March, and construction could start in April or May. Completion is expected by the fall of 2020. Also on Sunday, the Trib reported that the Story County Board of Supervisors voted to support a grant application that could bring advances in smart agriculture and better technologies to schools and students in the county. The grant could be valued up to $24 million. It involves using wireless infrastructure to link school districts, communities, and the county for the purpose of research, innovation, and student services. And Sunday's paper also had a feature story about three women from Washington and Alabama who learned that they were related through DNA testing with the help of the Sons of Norway group in Story City. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's paper had word that the Slater City Council selected an Ames-based company to install new technology at the community's wastewater treatment plant. The council approved an upgrade estimated to cost about $4 million. It will allow the city to meet state clean water permit standards. The company that will install it is Gross Wind Technologies. Tuesday's Trib also reported that a researcher at the Ames Laboratory has been named a 2018 National Academy of Inventors Fellow. Kostas Tsoukalos is also an Iowa State University professor in liberal arts and sciences. He was chosen as an NAI fellow for creating inventions that impact quality of life. There was also word that the Ag Reliant Genetics production location in Ogden had collected more than 500 non-perishable food and paper product items for a food pantry as part of its first annual Giving for Good food drive. The items were given to the Community United Methodist Food Pantry. That pantry is open to those in need on the second Tuesday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. And Tuesday's paper also had word that a Nevada couple's longtime vintage Christmas decorations suffered big-time damage during a heavy windstorm earlier this month. Bill and Carol Holstein said their Santa and sleigh decoration shattered into many pieces. This particular decoration was about 80 years old. Carol Holstein said she remembers it hanging near her relative's hardware store in Lincoln, Illinois, back in the 1950s. The Holsteins have been hanging it outside their Nevada home for the past three decades. Wednesday's Trib reported that unseasonably warm weather in Ames caused the city to postpone the ribbon cutting for two new outdoor ice skating rinks this week. The rinks at South River Valley Park were donated by the Iowa Wild hockey team and by Wells Fargo Bank. They were supposed to open Wednesday afternoon, but warmer than usual temperatures this month caused the city to delay their opening until sometime next month. Wednesday's paper also reported that the National Mental Illness Alliance of Central Iowa will provide a free 12-session educational program in Ames and Boone to families, significant others, and friends of people living with mental illness. Sessions will cover a variety of topics, including crisis management, taking care of oneself, developing confidence, and how to find and use local services. The sessions in Ames will take place on Mondays starting January 21st. In Boone, they will be on Tuesdays starting February 5th. Also Wednesday, a story about Raleigh Link, the retired Ames police officer who is the author of the G&B Detective Agency Mysteries. He talked to community members at the Erickson Public Library in Boone on Tuesday night about his books. His series features two police officers who win the lottery and start their own detective agency. He said the idea for the series characters came from his time at the Ames PD. Wednesday's Trib also had word about a Nevada family that's thankful for the life-saving gift they received from a local woman. Vicky and Craig Kruger's 36-year-old son Aaron needed a new kidney to survive, and he received it from Linda Bartleson, who had cared for the Kruger children in the early 90s when she ran the Cubs Club childcare at Central Elementary School. It's a heartwarming story, especially appropriate for this holiday season, and it's in Wednesday's Tribune. And there was one more story appropriate for the season in Wednesday's paper. It was a feature piece about how the Ames American Legion Post 37 brought Santa to Ames during the Great Depression in the 1930s. It was through a program called the American Legion Toy Shop, which involved getting donations of used and repairable toys, as well as clothing and food that would be distributed to families in need. That first program in 1931 resulted in 500 children receiving gifts. Thursday's Tribune, yesterday's, reported that a jury found an Ankeny man not guilty of invasion of privacy charges. 35-year-old Ryan Edward Rock had been accused of installing a camera in a private room at his Ames workplace. Authorities said he installed that camera so he could watch a coworker breast pump. Meanwhile, an appeal has been denied for an Iowa sex offender who took a plea agreement for sexually abusing multiple children in Story County. 30-year-old Michael Travis Ferguson had previously accepted a plea deal to five counts of lascivious acts with a child, but he appealed, saying there was a lack of communication between him and his lawyer. A judge denied that appeal Wednesday. One more legal note, a trial date has been set for the man accused of harassing Ames High Principal Spence Evans. Trial will start late next month for 49-year-old David Joseph Lunneberg, who was accused of harassing Evans on Twitter and of making false allegations against the principal from a fake email that hid his identity. Also yesterday, the Trib reported that nonprofit organizations in Ames, Boone, and Maxwell had received community grants from the Alliant Energy Foundation. The Trib also reported that an Urbandale developer is building rental homes on the southeast edge of Huxley. Company representatives said the development involves 38 attached town or twin homes that will rent for about $950 a month. The first units could be available for move-in by next April. And the Trib also reported on a Nevada couple, Charlene and Jeff Mason, who teach in the Ames School District by day, but who are in-home bakery operators in Nevada on nights and weekends. Their business is called The Sweet Shop of Ames, and they think they might someday have a store in Ames. But so far, they've sold their goods at the Ames Farmers Market and taken special orders on their Facebook page or by phone. And that is your summary of the week's news as reported on the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be right back here on Monday, Christmas Eve, with a look at what's making news around the state of Iowa. But just in case we miss each other on Monday, I'd like to take this opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas and the happiest of holidays. And as always, I hope you have a safe and happy weekend.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices.
This is Local Talk, and I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the news roundup. And that was Nat King Cole singing O Holy Night. If you live in Ames, you may have noticed that a house on Burnett Avenue downtown is quoting that song in lights in their Christmas light yard display. If you've driven on the block between 10th and 11th Street on Burnett at night, it's absolutely impossible to miss this. It's actually spanning two houses on the block and includes their front and back yards. And it can only be described as spectacular and beautiful. And like most beautiful things, this has a love story behind it. I was fortunate to be invited into the living room of Anthony and Patricia Taronis, the owners of the two houses, and their son Joseph was also there, and they told me the story of love behind this light display, which they think might be their last one after 52 years. It turns out that the son, Joe, is the artist behind the display, and I started out by asking him to describe some of what the display looks like so that you can imagine it if you haven't seen it.
Well, we've got the Virgin Mary in the center with a clear crystal tree behind in the center of the porch for the focal point. And then the front of the house has some reindeer, a mixture of old and the new. Icicles, once those came out, we really liked the way they looked. So we stuck with the clear icicles, which the old ones, incandescent, give off a more yellow color. They have a nice big evergreen type bush, decorate those in colored lights to give it a mixture. And then when the elderly neighbor passed, she had this big concrete bench in her backyard, so Dad drug it to the front of the walnut tree that's 50, 60, 75 years old, huge. So then we started decorating that, you know, as a focal point, and then they put a walkway up along the side of the house, so I put in colored lights, flower bed, and then that kind of leads to the back where the garage is lit up with three trees, and Santa's in the back, and then go around to the middle of the back, there's two maple tree. Didn't you start that maple tree, Mom? Wasn't that just a seedling when you moved here?
Yes.
But it's in the center of the backyard, and then there's a hackberry.
For us to sit out there and look at that, it's just a joy.
Part of it is for the people going by, kids and neighbors. Wanted to keep it more traditional in the front, so the whiter lights and stuff, and then and then in the back they've got a sunroom where they eat back there. I want them to enjoy the backyard, you know.
The stuff in the back is for your parents.
Yeah. So then I got the idea. I was going to work one day, and I just moved back here, and I was working on stuff, wanting to create, you know, come up with something different. And Oh Holy Night came on the radio when I was going to work, and part where it says fall on your knees is so strong and so impactful, and so powerful. I thought, I'm going to make a sign with that on it. And then went to the hardware store, tried to figure out what to make it out of, how I could write the words, and then made it in the basement and brought it out. And then once you figure out how to throw it over the limbs and climb, you know, then every year it gets a little easier to do.
So how do you actually make the writing? How do you keep it in place?
Wire and then zip ties.
What are you tying it to?
The fencing. Yeah, there's a fence, so you can't see it. That's up close, nothing's perfect.
Right.
Nothing's perfect. And then as it gets darker at night and you're far away, you know, then it looks really good or whatever. But I had to redo that this year, and then you can't find the same rope light with the same coloring, so I had to take some off of the manger scene to take over there, and yeah.
What exactly does it say?
Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angels' voices. And then I just, you know, I took it from the song, but I wasn't going to write the whole thing out. So right. Then I emphasized Christ is born as if it was back in that time the sign went up, you know, rather than it says Christ was born, you know, in the song and stuff. So I kind of improvised some. And
you know, Christmas also happens around this time of the year because it's there's a desire for light, you know, in the dead of winter, because this is the winter solstice, right?
Right.
So there's this desire for light. You've really embodied that, you know, bringing the light back into the winter.
It is a combination of Jesus was born, you know, to they say he is the light of the world. Part of the lights are that, and part of it are festival for kids with Santa Claus, you know, combination for everybody, you know. Yeah.
And then you have a nativity scene in the backyard too, right?
Right. What I had planned to do is put it underneath the sign, but then we put the trees, and so then I had plugins over there, so, you know.
That sign of the angels, that sign, I'll bet it took him 2 hours to get that to for he thought was perfect. Everything has to be just perfect. He can go out in the street, across the street, and stand off at different angles, and all these balls, the same thing. Everything had to be just right before he was happy.
Did it start small or big?
Oh, we started small. We used to take the greenery off of our pine trees because we owned the place next door and they had pine trees there. And I and my younger sons would take and stuff the gutters and then put lights on them. That's the way we started.
They've lived here 52 years. 52,
right.
Dad?
We've been here 52 years.
When we were kids, if Dad used to put the branches in the gutters, he would cut the bushes in the front and then stick them in the gutter like a garland, you know, like a wreath. And that's how it started when I was a kid. They only had one light socket on the front porch, and then they would string the lights. So they strung quite a few. Of course, then the bulbs were burned a lot hotter and everything.
Why did you start doing it?
I don't know, just religious background. For one thing, growing up here in Ames at St. Cecilia's, being Catholic, I grew up as an altar boy. We started on a small scale.
And they decorated every year, right?
Yes.
So...
And then my son took over.
I moved to Des Moines and lived there for 20 years. And in that time, sometime, they had an electrician put some outlets outside for their house. But they also owned the house next door. So I moved back and moved into that because Dad's health was going downhill. So they put outlets over there. So then we put some outlets on the... Put a new garage and outlets. So we've got a lot of outlets on the garage. So there's outlets all over outside that most people wouldn't have...
So the outlets are specifically for the Christmas decorations?
Yes.
So I'm curious, what do you think it is that made the leap from the pine branches in the gutter? How did that leap happen?
12 years ago, I remodeled my house in Des Moines. So then I was kind of in the mode of fixing stuff, you know, and I moved back. At the time, correct me if I'm wrong, Mom, wasn't Dad's health failing when I moved back?
Yes.
They wanted to stay in their house until... Mm-hmm. It passed on, so then when I moved up here, I felt like I had all kinds of time. So then I decided to start making stuff. I wanted to make it nice for him and that, you know, and obviously you see the inside. My mom has always done the inside nice. Well, Dad used to climb up, but when I moved back, he couldn't walk down the stairs. So then I started going up. So then in the past few years, I've been trying to come up with different stuff to make because people go by, you know, and I want them to get the attention, you know, why they still live here.
When does the planning start for this?
I'm not that good at, I kind of think about it when I'm at work or something and then get something done and then I try something to see if it works. Doing it as I go, really there isn't any boundaries, because if you go around town, there's some really nice displays, but you can't really lose, because if you put up anything, at least you're trying, you know. And now I get a phone call at work saying that you're wanting to interview me. It's like, well, the reindeer don't even work. So now it's like people are going to be tries. So I'm going to pull the reindeer out and leave them out for tonight and work on them in the garage.
Do you get a lot of comments?
Yeah, he does, because he's outdoors all the time, and people will go by and they'll stop. And
yeah, people will stop and slow down. I mean, there's a lot of lights to look at, so they can't just drive straight by, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot.
People walk by and say, man, I really like the lights, or wow. And
as a matter of fact, when he was out there putting up lights, he just put that sign up there on the Angels. And some old gentleman come along, and this gentleman will stand there singing the song.
I have my headphones on, and I'm trying to fix stuff. You know, I'm on the side of the house, and I can hear somebody. Some guy's singing on the front sidewalk. Fall on your knees. Well, I didn't know what he was saying, because I had my headphones on over here. So I took my headphones off, and he kept singing. So I waved to him.
And Joe said, he started out, he said he had a good voice.
He's probably 65 or 70, and he wouldn't quit singing. He kept singing, so I went to the front sidewalk and introduced myself and asked him his name and shook his hand and said, well, thanks for singing it. I said, you know, I should go get my parents. It's their house. Would you sing for them? He said he'd stop back by. That was kind of neat. He was inspired by the sign, and he wouldn't quit singing. He kept...
And he sang the whole song, and Joe just kept decorating, and the guy just kept singing.
Does this help you celebrate Christmas?
Oh, yes, sure. That's part of the Christmas thing.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and you've been listening to a conversation I was able to record yesterday when Anthony and Patricia Taronis, along with their son Joseph Taronis, welcomed me into their house and allowed me to interview them about their spectacular Christmas yard light display that is on Burnett Avenue between 10th and 11th Street. Definitely something worth checking out, and it may be the last year that this can be seen. And the living room that we were in was every bit as stunning and beautiful as the art is. You couldn't help but notice that when you were in the house. So let's pick up the recording of this conversation again with this thought. Did I understand you correctly when I thought I heard you say that partly what inspired the elaborate display outside was inspired by what your mother does inside the house already?
Yeah.
So it's a reflection of what the house looks like on the inside.
Exactly.
It's kind of the other side of the story.
Oh, my wife does a tremendous job of decorating. This is her job inside, and it's got to be just perfect. That's where he gets his creativity. To them, it's got to be just perfect. You can see that she's done all the decorating inside, but my son has done the decorating outside.
Could you just give some sort of description of what we're looking at in here? Because it's wonderful to see such a beautiful house.
Yeah. Put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in this house.
Right. It has golden oak wood throughout the house, pillared panels that separate each room. They've always decorated, if it was kids' paintings or pretty much a family tradition. You know, Dad and Mom started it when we were kids, decorating.
She brought everything down there from the attic herself and did all the decorating. So she did a tremendous job.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I haven't purchased hardly anything. Everything has been a gift. Some of the things are things my children gave my mom and dad, like over there, Jesus and Mary and the little church and the little Christmas tree that's all in glass. Now, that was a gift from my daughter to my parents. And then every ball up here.
They're hanging above the door between the entrance and the living room.
Right. My sister was an artist. In fact, she actually was requested to paint a ball for the White House when the Clintons were there.
Oh, wow.
And so then she painted balls and gave me balls. So I really never purchased anything, but everything here is a memory. So I could go around this house and everything is a gift from some child. Somebody's giving me the Santas over there. Somebody's
behind you. There's wooden carved Santas in different types of Santas.
Yeah, my husband was a mail carrier for 42 years, so a daughter got these Santas.
And they're mail carrier Santas.
Exactly.
And tell me about this sign up here.
Well, up there I have a sign that says Merry Christmas. And I bought all those on Main Street back in the 60s when Ben Franklin was on Main Street. And they're paper, and I used them every year, and they kept perfect.
You've got a long dining room table that's set for a party. Sits 14, and it is ready.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of the table, you've got a huge glass urn with poinsettias and a Santa Claus.
Well, I might tell you a little bit about that Santa Claus. That was given to my mother. My parents moved to Arizona from Eldora, Iowa, after they moved. And one of their friends painted that Santa. And then the tree there... Mm-hmm. Our son-in-law had a transplant at Mayo Clinic, and when he was at Mayo Clinic, we were roaming around while he was ill, and we were visiting, and we bought that, and that's remembering of Dave. And see, then, like over here, the little choir people, my mother came with those, somebody giving them to her. Mm-hmm. And every item on our tree is a gift except a few balls I bought. So really, I haven't purchased anything, but there's stories with everything.
So these are all...
It just shows that if you have Christmas, people share, and then those memories stay because everybody gave the gifts. I didn't buy them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for. And then you have a picture of your husband's family,
right,
from Mexico.
Right. My husband's father and his brother both came to Ames, lived their whole life in Ames.
And you're at the DAR, right?
So, yes. Yeah. I'm a DAR member for my own family, my dad's side.
And I noticed the top of the curtains of the Mexican flag.
Right, right.
I will say, even when my parents had 8 kids living here, and we had to take turns taking showers, and everybody ate at the table, and by the time we were done eating, all of the dessert was gone, and they still found money in the budget to decorate outside, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So they've always given to all of us kids and that, so I'm trying to pay them back for, you know, everything they've done, you know, and worked hard their whole life and that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put everybody else first.
Needless to say, we've got a visual description of the Christmas spirit going on in this house, and that's what's spilling out over into the into the outside.
Like I said, always had a big house to grow up in, big family, and you know, so obviously a big display of lights, you know, fit the scenario. Raised 8 kids in this house, so it's been a full house for 52 years, and then, you know, all the celebrations they've had here and everything. Here they're having Christmas again, you know, at their age. With all of us, because they've got the biggest house and the best display. And then you've got great-grandkids coming up. So, of course, their kids and the grandkids, the great-grand, they want them to experience what they experience. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really end. But yet, you know, dad's close to the end and mom's elderly. But they still don't complain. They make it special, keep everybody connected. They're wanting to have a celebration.
So the light show, in a way, is a monument to what they've accomplished and,
exactly,
and the spirit.
They've been married 64 years, almost going on 65 here next year. And so all these 52 years we've been here, we've had Christmas here every year. And after my dad died, mother came to live with us from Arizona. And then his parents came here. So many, many people have come here at Christmas. So it's a focal point for everybody in our family.
We have 8 children. We have about 15, 16 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So they all come here for Christmas. So it's quite a gathering. So so we always look forward to that.
My husband was the firstborn Mexican in his family in Ames, Iowa. He had a brother born in Mexico, and his parents worked for Mexico. He always said Ames was like God's country to him.
We were originally the only Mexican family here in town. We were accepted in the community because there weren't so many of us, and people got to know us individually as a family. When I first came out of service, I said, I've been to a lot of places over the country, and I said, this is a good place to raise a family. So we stayed here, and it did turn out to be the best place. And so we had never had any problems, and... I've been to a lot of places, and this is really the best place.
So the people of Ames has always treated their family very, very nicely. So with the way the country is today, I say we just say amen. Ames has been like God's country to my husband and his family.
To come from another country, weren't they the first Mexican family in Ames? Mm-hmm. And then to end your life in a nice stately house with nice decorations. Mm-hmm. The number of years that I decorate might be limited, you know.
Yeah.
Dad wanted to live here till the end, and Mom might, and she might not once he's gone. So what did the doctor say? His time is getting near. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a push for me to add some stuff to make it one of the best ones. They'll go to like the grocery store down the street, and then somebody will say, oh, we really like the lights, and then he'll go to the hardware store. So when I hear that, it's like, okay, I want to put up more lights so they get more attention.
What do you think people should know about him?
They had 8 kids. It took a lot of work to raise 8 kids, and you know, there's a lot of things that happen in a lifetime with a big family, with any family, you know. You know, they did everything the right way. Not the easy way, mm-hmm. the right way, you know, with all the stuff that goes on in the world. They always found money. Dad always worked. What did he work? 2 and 3 jobs, Mom, right, you know. Right. Mom made everything, sewing and drapes and made dresses and all that, you know. Yeah. They're having Christmas again, you know, at their age. And so I wanted to come back and make sure they could live here until they passed. You know, Dad's close to the end, elderly, but they still don't complain. And then last year, a guy, he takes all the pictures for the newspapers. He took a picture and put it in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, good. You know, now, you know, they can mm-hmm. pass on knowing that they got in the yeah. newspaper. Well, now I got a phone call at work saying that you knocked on the door. It's like, okay, all we need is a TV now. Yeah.
So it's a tribute to your parents and exactly. to the life that you had here.
Exactly. And all that they've done for all the kids, you know, and the grandkids.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to come in. This is a beautiful thing to see.
The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long live the world in sin and till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour, and many thanks to the Taronis family for so warmly welcoming me into their living room and telling their story and the story behind the spectacular lights. And if you do want to see it, it's on Burnett Avenue between 10th and 11th, and not guaranteed that it'll be there next year due to Mr. Taronis' health. Thank you for listening in on Local Talk this morning, and we're going to switch now to a little bit less lovely topic. This is the time of the year when drunk driving becomes a problem. Our reporter, Joy B., interviewed Doug Scholes, who's the regional director for Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
This is Joy B with KHOI Radio. I am talking to Doug Scholes. Could you give us your title?
I'm the regional director for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, overseeing what we call the Great Lakes region, which includes Iowa and a number of states around the Great Lakes.
I'd like to know, how did Mothers Against Drunk Driving start?
Well, it started back in 1980 when a lady, her name is Candace Leitner, lost her 13-year-old daughter to a repeat drunk driver. And back in those days, quite frankly and literally, not much was done. We just didn't think about drunk driving the way we do now. We look back in those times, and matter-of-factly speaking, we were losing on our highways each year from drunk driving alone close to 30,000 people. And we're down to 10,000 a year. However, that may sound like an accomplishment, and it is. But if you're one of those 10,000 victim survivors, we have a long way to go.
And what is the impact on the survivors and the people that have lost someone from a drunk driver or a drugged driver, as we have now included people that drink under the influence of drugs or alcohol? Say, is the impact very
often? It is. And there's a lot of things get the headliners in the news, and rightfully so today. But I can tell you that drunk driving or impaired driving from drugs or alcohol has not gone away, and it's there. And like I said, 10,000 people a year are killed. We don't even talk about the injuries as much, but another 250,000 people are injured on our highways from drunk driving and impaired driving each year in the U.S. And the impact is devastating. Imagine getting that knock on the door in the middle of the night, and you notify your loved one has been killed or injured, seriously injured, and your whole life has turned upside down in an instant, and then you have to live with that the rest of your life. And there's many, many what we call the ripple effects from just trying to function normally and finding a new normal after this. And it goes on and on. The bottom line is, this is a very bad thing all the way around.
In 1991, I was hit by a person that had been drinking, and my car spun around many times, and I had to be pulled by the jaws of life, and the door was wrapped around the left side of my body, and I was trapped. And I'll never forget when I went to court and the person was charged with just a $25 fine. I was upset because I had a lifetime. I'm in my 50s now, and this was in my 30s. I was 30 years old and, you know, left with a lifetime of pain and injuries and loss of income, loss of work because of the accident. And I hope that people will, you know, really think before they get in a car with, you know, especially, you know, maybe you didn't drink, but the person you're with is drinking. You know, that the impact, if an accident does occur, is, you know, pretty serious and very impactful for the person that is injured, and especially if the person is killed, to their family and their friends and their, you know, maybe it's their, have children and things like that. So really think. And is there anything else you wanted to talk about that maybe is going on at MAD that we might not know about or that we haven't covered in this interview?
Well, MAD is our mission is centered on different prongs. We talk about drunk driving and drug impaired and alcohol impaired driving. We support victims of drunk driving as well as impaired driving. And if you're a victim of drunk driving, you know, call 1-877-MAD-HELP. That's MADDHELP. 1-877-MAD-HELP. If you're a victim or know somebody, you can get help 24 hours a day. We have somebody to answer the phone, and we'll get you the support that you need and linkages to community support that you need as well. Our focus is also on preventing underage drinking as well, and we have great programs for that. So, again, go to our website, madd.org, mad.org, and you can find all the information that you need to get, whether you're a victim of yourself or whether you want to get involved with MAD to help us volunteer. I've been with MAD for 14 years, and I can go into the weeds and the horror stories, but you know, families split up over this. There's a ripple effect. People can't hold jobs. I mean, it goes on and on and on as to the negative impact of either a death or an injury from drunk driving. And it's such a strain on a family in so many, many ways after it happens.
how do you stay aware as a person that maybe isn't drinking and driving that there are people out there? Is there anything you can do to prevent becoming a survivor or a victim of drunk driving?
That's a great question, Joy. I would say a couple things here. First of all, you know, be cognizant. That's a very good point. Be aware of your surroundings. Know that this is a traditionally heavily party weekend under this holiday. So be extra vigilant and cautious of what's going on around you. And if you see something, somebody driving erratically, don't try to take it in your own hands. You know, keep your distance, but call 911. Report this and say you may save a life, including your own, but maybe someone else's as well. But this is a very potentially dangerous weekend. Last year, we lost almost 900 people on our highways from drunk driving between Thanksgiving and New Year's, and focuses around New Year's Eve, quite frankly. So this is a very dangerous time of the year over the holidays, and particularly this weekend, as we go out to a three-day weekend traditionally around the country.
Age group is most often the group that goes out and drives without planning ahead?
Well, I want to stress that this crosses all spectrums, but traditionally the age group between 21 and 34 is a major concern. They are involved socially, that age group demographically, and they are involved with festivities and many times parties. That age group still is out there as probably the primary age group, but I want to stress that this can happen to anyone, and I say happen, that this action is taken by every age group. And again, plan ahead, prevent this from happening. If you're going to drink alcohol, don't try to drive your vehicle. Don't say, well, I'm probably okay, because when you've been drinking, you probably do feel okay. And I think people do feel that way. But that's the alcohol talking. That's not what you would say if you hadn't been drinking. If you know alcohol is involved, not a good plan to even try to drive after you've been drinking.
And how does Iowa rate compared to the rest of the country as far as the drunk driving laws and the statistics for driving?
Sure. As far as drunk driving goes, Iowa's right in the average or the top side of the average spectrum here. The average is around 30 to 32%, or around a third of our fatalities on the roadways are alcohol or impaired driving caused. And I think Iowa is around the 26-27%, right at the average mark there. And when we say average, again, I hate to use numbers, because we're talking about human lives that we're losing here. This is not about a game of chess or anything. This is actually human lives. And so, you know, last year in Iowa, there's 106 fatalities that were caused by impaired driving, alcohol impaired driving. And an eye opener to me is two-thirds of those were people who had a BAC level, that's a blood alcohol concentration, alcohol in your system, of over twice the legal limit, which means that there's some serious drinking going out there. It's a really bad errors in judgment to try to take to the road in that condition. Well, you know, Mayor believes that we need to stop this by enacting effective legislation by requiring ignition interlock devices for all convicted offenders, first-time offenders especially, so that they're identified in the system and they can't go out and drive a vehicle on a suspended license when they're drunk or impaired. And we have this in 30 states. Iowa does not have this yet, but we think this is the most effective way that we can to bring down the number of fatalities in Iowa.
Does Iowa not have it yet because the legislation has not been introduced, or is there some interference in causing that law to go through?
We're actually working on it right now as we speak in Iowa, and it is moving forward, we hope. It just takes a while to get it enacted into law, but we're hopeful, and we're going to be trying to see this hopefully pass in 2018. Again, it has saved many, many lives across the country, and not only just saving lives, by requiring this interlock devices, which is in essence is a breathalyzer tube in your vehicle. Again, it's only for convicted drunk drivers, not for the sober driver. And a first-time offender is so important because they need to be identified as an impaired driver and not fall through the cracks in some loopholes. because they'll never get the right treatment or right effective action to stop that from happening in the future. But we've also seen reduction in recidivism rates from this law as well. So it's a win-win-win across the board. It saves lives. It's not taxpayer bought or paid for. It's paid for by the offender. They're very economical. But just by blowing in and reproving you are sober before you drive during your probationary license period does wonders to save lives on our roads, and Iowa needs this badly, as well as the other remaining states in the country.
Thank you so much for your time. This is such an important topic for me. Thank you for making the time to help me get it out there.
Thank you for doing this.
I want to thank Cynthia McClure, our KHOI editor, for this show. Our music's excerpt is from Synthetic Waltz by Virgil Thompson.
And thank you, Joy B, for interviewing Doug Scholes, who is the regional director for Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Casey Vance, the executive director of the Ames History Center, has arrived to give your monthly visit to KHOI. We always look forward to the yummy topics that you bring with us, and you have a yummy exhibit going on.
Yes, we have a brand new exhibit.
I want to ask you about it. It's a photographs, right?
Yes, it is photographs from the collection of Farwell Brown. He was the Ames historian for decades, and he actually started the Historical Society in 1980. And the photos are actually held by Ames Public Library. So we're partnering with them on this exhibit to show off some of his really interesting photos from that collection. He really focused on early Ames history, so a lot of these are turn-of-the-century photos. The ones that we chose for the exhibit, we chose them because they really place visitors in the past, let you visualize what maybe a current location that you drive by every day looked like 100 years ago or however long ago. So the photos in the exhibit each have a number on them, and then we have a brochure that you can take with you that's a map that corresponds to the numbers so that you can make sure that you know where this photo was taken.
So would you describe two or three of the photographs?
Sure.
Just to give us a taste?
Yeah. So one that's sort of timely with Christmas coming up, a lot of the photos in Farwell's collection are taken by Martin Morrison. Mm-hmm. He was a photographer in Ames. He was originally from Norway, and he traveled back and forth between Ames and Norway and has a big collection of photos of Ames and a big collection of photos of his hometown in Norway. So Farwell has some of those in his collection, and one of them is a photo of a sleigh ride on Lincoln Way, and it's looking north towards Main Street, and it's just amazing to see there's nothing around. It's crazy compared to
today. Street from Lincoln Way?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, you can see the backs of the buildings, and it's just really fascinating just to imagine it being so bare between there. Another one that some people might actually remember, so not all of the photos are really that old. In 1987, Ames Stationers burned on Main Street, and that is the location today of Quilting Connection on the corner of Main and Kellogg. And it was a huge fire, and the photo we have shows the whole building and the fire department putting out the fire. And that building was owned by Tom Evans of Tom Evans Plaza, and he felt that because of the historic significance of the building, he needed to rebuild it even after the fire. And so he rebuilt just the first floor. The second floor was completely destroyed.
If you look at really old photographs of Main Street, it looks much more urban than it does today. And you think to yourself, is this the same place?
Yeah.
But it's because the top floors of several of the buildings burned down. And so it doesn't have that urban look anymore.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Fires have always been a huge problem on Main Street, especially in like the 1880s. There was a huge fire and all the buildings were wood. So just like a huge section of a block burned down. Yeah.
That one's interesting, too, because they're literally right now in the process of giving the building a facelift.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Kind of interesting to watch the progress.
Definitely. Yeah.
So tell us another photograph.
Let's see. So we sort of have the photos in the exhibit divided into categories. And one of the categories we chose is interior photos of businesses. And the reason that we chose that as a category is because it's so rare to have interiors of businesses around the turn of the century. They didn't take pictures inside. At that time, they used flash powder, which was really dangerous, especially indoors. It wasn't until about the 1930s that flash bulbs were really dependable and able to replace the powder. So we have a few photos of interiors of early Ames businesses. One of them is the Grove Brothers store, about 1897, and that was also on the corner of Main and Kellogg across the street where the Loft is today. So it's just really interesting in these interiors to see, you know, all the things that these stores were selling. Grove Brothers was a general store, and I find that one really interesting. Because, you know, walking into the Loft today, you can imagine it looks just the same. Different wares, but...
It has high ceilings, right?
Yes, yeah, high ceilings. One of the other categories is State Gym, and we have three photos that show community events and things happening in State Gym. It was built in 1913, and at that time, it was the largest venue in Ames. It's on ISU campus on the west side. And it was used for athletic events like a gym. But then since it was the biggest place in Ames, it was used for a lot of things, graduation and big events. And so one of the most interesting photos is 100 years ago, there was a flu epidemic and in 1918 and 19. And Iowa State was hit really hard. Hmm. And so State Gym was converted into a hospital. Hmm. So this photo shows all the hospital cots laid out, and you can see just how they used it that
way.
Now,
this is not the armory, right?
No.
It's a different building.
It's a different building, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yes, when the armory was built about 10 years later, then it became the largest building, and so a lot of these big events moved
and
there.
The flu was a serious enough a disease that they actually had to create an infirmary for it.
Yes, and actually Iowa State was quarantined. You had to get a signed pass to leave or enter campus.
Wow, not great marketing.
Yes.
Any other photographs we should talk about before? I know we're kind of running out of time, but mm-hmm. it's really, really fun to look at these photographs.
Yeah,
it's,
there's just so many great
really
ones.
It's really a fun exhibit.
Definitely. Yeah. Uh-huh. Farwell's full photo collection is available on the Ames Public Library's website.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone should go check that out.
And it's indexed by topics and
yes,
years,
yes,
right?
Yes, uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. So it's pretty easy to get lost in there and just look through all the really interesting photos. And then this exhibit at the Historical Society will be up until August. So you have quite a bit of time to come in and check out the photos.
And give us your website.
It is ameshistory.org.
Okay, thank you. And we've been speaking with Casey Vance. She's the executive director of Ames History Center, our neighbor, our mm-hmm. good neighbor, whom we love, and who come in once a month and just kind of keep us in touch with the past. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin. Thank you, Aladdin. And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris, from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelley. You also heard Oh Holy Night by Nat King Cole and Celine Dion. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can also hear a copy of this show on the homepage of KHOIFM.org, our website, later today. And we also broadcast at that website, and that, again, is KHOIFM.org, where you can also find an archive of past shows. Now, this is also the website that you can go to make a donation to KHOI. We are still raising money. We need this money for our operations next year. Our goal is $40,000, and we are only at $20,000, so we really need to ask you to come through. And if you appreciate programming at KHOI, please support your community radio station. It is what keeps us on the air. And the way you do that is you go to KHOIFM.org. There's a donate button there, a safe and secure way to donate to KHOI. Again, that's KHOIFM.org, and there's a donate button on the homepage. And we really sincerely thank every single person who has sent in your donations. They come in regularly every day. Every single donation we get, we are so appreciative because it means that this community is prepared to support its community radio station. Please remember that your participation as the audience is what makes Local Talk and KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames growth while enjoying a wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses have to offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.